From KLCC Studios, this is Oregon on the Record.
I'm Michael Dunn. Oregon has obtained a reputation as being unfriendly to business. Some cite tough anti-growth regulations, others cite a regressive tax situation. But whatever it is, chambers of commerce and business organizations routinely rail against the Beaver State's anti-business climate. But what if that reputation isn't supported by facts on the ground? Today on the show, you'll hear from an OSU doctor in economics who led a study that showed that more businesses opened in Oregon in the past decade than closed, which runs counter to the state's reputation. Then, in the second part of the show, you'll hear from one of our reporters on her story about a local sheep rancher who's learned a lifetime of lessons by becoming an accidental shepherd here in Oregon. That's next on Oregon on the Record. After going through the shock of COVID and the ups and downs of the economy over the past decade, many Oregonians might be surprised to learn that more businesses have opened in the state than closed over the past decade. Today on the show, you'll hear from an economics expert on a study which points to our state's surprising business resiliency. Richard Akwa Sarpong, who is a doctor in applied economics at Oregon State University. Richard, thanks so much for coming on and talking with us.
Hi, Michael. Thank you so much. Thanks for having me.
Yeah, I read about the study that you did. I found it fascinating. Mm-hmm. Tell us about this study you found regarding business openings and closings in Oregon.
Right. Thank you. So my study actually found that Oregon experienced net business growth for the most part of 2012 to 2022 period. And in most years, more establishments actually opened than closed. And the broad pattern is that Oregon looked weak in the post-recession years, but from about 2015 onward, entry or business openings generally outpaced closings, which points to a business environment that was more, adaptive or entrepreneurial. Yeah.
Okay. Tell us how you conducted your research.
So I used a private establishment level data from the National Establishment Time Series database, together with U.S. Census Bureau Business Formation Statistics data. And what I did was I tracked business openings and closures over time, and then I compared the ratio of openings to closings across industries, and also mapped those ratios across Oregon counties to see both the sectorial and geographic variation.
Obviously, when you started your research in 2012 till now, there was an enormous shock to all states, the world,
right,
with regard to COVID. Can you talk a little bit about how COVID impacted business openings and closings in Oregon?
So during the COVID years, we saw a slight decrease in the number of new businesses. However, this was still significantly higher than the number of closures. And when COVID ended, we also saw a national surge in business applications, which Oregon also participated strongly in that wave.
Were certain industries in your study, did certain industries do particularly well in terms of new business openings in Oregon?
Yeah, so the strongest performance was concentrated mostly in the service-oriented industries.
Okay.
And yeah, I find that especially strong net entry when it comes to the transportation industry, the real estate industry, the education, food and hospitality as well, with openings running about 50% above closures over the 2012 to 2022 period.
So I guess the flip side of that coin would be, were there certain industries that you saw a dramatic number of businesses that had to close up shop?
Yeah, so the one sector that explicitly reported as having more closings than openings was the management of companies and enterprise sectors. So those have to do with like regional head offices, holding companies, and the like. But there were other sectors that showed some form of stagnation, right? And those has to do with the manufacturing sectors, right? We have the wood, paper, chemical, metals, machinery, and I think the electronics manufacturing sectors that roughly showed almost the same number of closings to openings.
Let me reintroduce you to the audience. We're talking to Richard Akwa Sarpong. He is a doctorate in applied economics at Oregon State University. Were there any based on your study, were there any conclusions you could draw in terms of why certain businesses, certain industries were able to open more businesses than perhaps others that didn't do as well?
Yes. So as we saw in the study, we see that most of these industries that are actually growing or having more entries have to do with the service sector. And I think that one of the main drivers of this dynamic is population growth. And those are sectors with the strong growth, which are mainly the service sectors, the hospitality, those are really correlated with population growth. And within that same period, actually in Oregon, we saw about 7% increase in the population in the state. I would say a relatively educated workforce in the state that's compared to other states, and that is also driving this entrepreneurial spirit that we see in the state.
Richard, my last question for you is this. There is conventional wisdom. You often hear politicians talk about their belief that Oregon is not a business-friendly state. And I'm just wondering, and maybe this is asking you to, you know, to some conjecture a little bit, but your study seems to suggest that's not necessarily the case, that in terms of, if you look at just, you know, business openings versus closings, we're doing pretty well.
Right. So, yeah, that's not, in my opinion, that's not entirely the case.
Okay.
We know that the state has generated sustained net growth when it comes to new business openings over much of the last decade, right? And that matters because a place that is truly hostile to business will not normally show openings persistently exceeding closures, right? So I think that the more accurate takeaway is that Oregon's business climate is mixed. We have startup activity that has comparatively been strong, but the other concern has to do with scaling or the expansion of businesses. And so I think it really depends on which margins we are really interested in. Are we interested in the extensive margin when it comes to the number of new businesses, or we are more interested in the intensive margin when it comes to the expansion and the scaling of business? And I think these two are more important. And I think there have been also reports showing that many Oregon businesses have expanded out of state. That presents some challenges to the economy because Oregon will now lose thousands of potential jobs and private investment. And so I think that the conventional idea that Oregon is unfriendly, I think that is not entirely true. That is partly true when you look at expansions and the internal growth of businesses. But when it comes to the formation of new businesses, I think Oregon has a very good environment when it comes to startup.
Okay. Well, this was fascinating and very interesting findings. Richard Akwa Sarpong, who is a doctorate in applied economics at Oregon State University. Richard, really appreciate you coming on and talking with us.
Thank you so much, Michael. I appreciate it.
Julia Bobach of our station joins us now to talk about her latest story on the life of a shepherd in our community. Julia Bobach, reporter for us here at KLCC. Julia, great to see you. Thanks for coming in.
Thanks for having me.
Yeah, I really enjoyed your story. I might even term it sort of interviewing an accidental shepherd here in our community. Just give us the overview of what the story was about.
Absolutely. So this story is about Scotty Jones, who moved to Alsea, Oregon at 50 years old to start a sheep farm, or I guess to buy a sheep farm and start her and her husband's life as sheep farmers. Her story is just an incredible one of adapting to a completely new environment, learning as you go. And it was just really fun to see her now 23 years into sheep farming, being very comfortable, obviously very natural, but also knowing the insane situations that came up at the beginning that kind of shaped her journey to this point now.
Yeah, before we get into some of those highs and lows, what interested you in this story?
I really wanted to do a story on sheep farming. I didn't necessarily have a specific angle or idea with that, but I was mostly inspired by the fact that Olympic uniforms were made with Oregon wool.
Okay.
And so I was like, well, this feels like a really cool excuse to go to a sheep farm and interview some farmers on what the wool industry looks like and things like that. So I reached out to a bunch of farms, and Scotty responded. And again, I didn't really have a very specific angle in mind, but after our conversations, it kind of revealed, I think, this really interesting sort of cyclical story about birth and life and death on sheep farms in Oregon.
Yeah, and I thought it was great because you sort of talk about this. She had this romantic ideal of what it was going to be like, and it really hit headlong into reality, didn't it?
Yeah. I mean, it was like first few days, I think she was talking about how everything was going wrong. And it was really interesting. She also mentioned that things like that are the reason that farmers are so adaptable, and they take on so many different roles because there's no one else to do it. And she specifically kind of has this story of her city dogs leading a sheep into a creek and calling her neighbor and saying, I need a vet. You know, this sheep is hurt. And the neighbors, who have clearly been on their farm for longer, saying, no, you don't need a vet. That's going to be more than $100. You need to figure this out yourself. And that seemed to be the general way that everything was going, was you just have to figure it out yourself. No one's going to come here and help you. So you have to be the carpenter, or the engineer, or the vet, and all of those things.
Yeah, it's funny. As I was listening to your story, you know, Scotty comes from Phoenix, Arizona, and I thought, oh, she worked at the Phoenix Zoo, so she must know about animals. But of course, she was just doing business, and you know, which is very important. But obviously, you know, she really had to learn on the fly, didn't she?
Oh, yeah. So she went and got an education in archaeology, and then she worked in the business and retail side of the zoo. And she was telling me that she thought there was absolutely nothing in her background that was going to help her on this farm whatsoever. Mm-hmm. And it turned out to be quite the opposite. I mean, things as simple as, you know, you get an education in archaeology so you can move a wheelbarrow around. And also on the business side and the retail side of the zoo, being able to start her farm stay and know how to track profits and losses and know, you know, how to sort of market things. But I think another really interesting story that she mentioned that didn't actually make it into the story or into the piece, she was talking about how the manager of the zoo, people would come into the zoo and say, you guys need to clear up these brushes on like the side of the walkways because they're kind of getting in the way, and like bushes and plants. And she said the manager of the zoo would always say no because he wanted people to actually, as she put it, brush up with nature. And so she kind of had this mentality kind of from watching him do that and understanding the reasons he was doing that. And she said being on this farm now really felt like brushing up with nature in a really intentional way. So I kind of liked that that callback.
Sure. Let me reintroduce you to the audience. We're talking to KLCC reporter Julia Bobach. in your piece, you talk about the fact that her family and friends were kind of shocked that she made this huge life transition.
Yeah, yeah. Her one of her kids had just gone to college, and she just said everyone was absolutely appalled by the fact. I mean, I can imagine. I'm like thinking of my own mom just becoming a farmer kind of out of nowhere. Yeah, she said her kids would like come and stay on the farm and things like that. But people were betting on her and her husband to not make it in this. And I mean, the truth is, I also spoke to someone who works with the OSU Extension Service, who taught Scotty a lot of the more hard skills of farming and things like that. And she said it is really hard as a first generation farmer to survive. And there are a lot of things that you need to know that people inherently know when they're generations and generations of farmers before them that understand the land so inherently, that first generation and beginning farmers might not understand, that can quickly sort of lead them to leave farming. And but Scotty, as Scotty put it, she dug her heels in. As soon as people, you know, were doubting her, she felt even more motivated to prove them wrong. And she did.
Yeah, I guess you need that tenacity, of course. But then she's also, in your piece, you talk about the fact that in addition to raising sheep and lambs, they do agrotourism. First of all, what is that? What is agrotourism?
Yeah, so Scotty has a farm stay, which is two different buildings. There's one sort of six-bedroom big house. It's stunning. It's so freaking cool. And a cottage as well, that's sort of small, pretty front porch, looks out on the fields and the chicken coops and things like that. And she started that 3 years into her farming. And that came from understanding the business in retail and also understanding that lamb meat doesn't pay the bills as much, or it can pay the bills, but you're not necessarily going to make a profit. So she started these farm stays, and over the years, people have been coming from across the country. I think she had mentioned recently after I visited that, or before I visited, maybe someone came from Vermont or something like that. So maybe even different than that, because she said they had never really seen fields in this way. So I imagine they weren't from Vermont. But yeah, people come and they essentially live on the farm and learn what farming looks like, and a lot of times they bring their kids to play around with the animals, and it seems like the way that Scotty wants it to be is this moment of real connection and intentional time in nature and with each other in nature. There are tons of hikes and creeks and so many animals around to just admire. And I mean, I was pretty sold on the farm stay after I visited. I was like, Mom, I told my mom, maybe we need to make this happen. I don't know about conflict of interest, but.
Well, but it's interesting too, towards the end of the piece, you know, you talk about that Scotty, you know, she had some real trouble with the butchering of the lambs. Talk about that.
Yeah, so she mentioned that really, you know, early on, she inherited this lamb meat business. That's what the farm had been before, and there were different kinds of sheep, and she kind of shifted over. But early on, she said it was really hard for her to be around, and she specifically said that in Arizona, she was accustomed to thinking about life, but she didn't necessarily think about the death part of things, unless it was, you know, a pet or something like that. And so, early on, as I can imagine and sort of understand, early on it was really difficult. She said the butcher came at like 5 in the morning and she just wouldn't want to be there. But 20 years in, she said she's more, it's more interesting now because she's kind of accepted that this is the life cycle of it all. And you know, in the same way that plants grow and die on the farm, you know, so do the lambs, in order to not just pay the bills, but in order to keep life going on the farm.
Sure. Yeah.
And she said it's interesting for her now actually to be a part of it and learn more about what the lamb meat is, what it looks like, you know, talk to the butcher about, you know, is this a good lamb? Why or why not? Like, what should we be doing better to make these higher quality? So it's also been quite the journey for her, going from being really maybe bothered, bothered by the death of it all, to now understanding that that's really just a part of farm life and it's important to be a part of.
Yeah. Julia, my last question, does Scotty have any regrets?
None at all. None at all.
Oh, that's great. That's great. Julia Bobach, reporter for us here at KLCC, thanks so much for your story.
Thank you, Michael.
That's the show for today. All episodes of Oregon on the Record are available as a podcast at klcc.org. Tomorrow on the show, as many of us start to make summer plans, a local teacher is planning to race from Canada to Mexico by bike and try and beat the speed record. I'm Michael Dunn, host of Oregon on the Record. Thanks for listening.